as I was just sitting here, and we have this meeting scheduled for 9 o'clock, I was just sitting and thinking, I guess when we're practicing awareness, we don't need to wait for anything to happen anymore. Instead of sitting and waiting, okay, like, when are we going to get going, and when is this going to start, and what are we doing, and there's no more waiting, right? We're just here in awareness. Waiting becomes another mind state, just another mind state to notice. Just that was a nice, kind of a nice reflection, just to kind of settle into the awareness without that anticipation of something needing to happen, something other needing to happen. So I think people are starting to settle in a little more. Usually the first day, you know, requires a certain level of adjustment and settling, first couple of days. Many people were talking about their tiredness, you know, just the amount of tiredness that came on, particularly the first day. You know, some people talking about just feeling absolutely exhausted, you know, like some people saying that never remembering feeling that tired in their whole life, you know. And, you know, just the permission to follow what it is that feels right in any moment, you know, and then, you know, if that tiredness comes on, you know, just to rest, to really take rest, because that's what's needed, that's what the body wants. And a few people mentioned how, you know, when there's a schedule posted on the board, then it seems like, you know, sleeping for a couple of hours is, you know, not really what you're supposed to be doing. You're supposed to be getting back to the meditation hall and get yourself energized and upright. But it seems that, you know, there's something very heartwarming for me when I know that when people are really exhausted, that they take rest. I mean, it's just a natural thing to do, to replenish, to restore the body. And, you know, many of us have active lives or, you know, busy lives, a lot of commitments, some stress, you know, a lot going on, and that tiredness can accumulate, or that stress can accumulate, and we don't even know how much we're pushing. We don't even know how much we're carrying, and that stress, that tiredness. And so we come to a retreat, and many of you know this, and you just start to relax, and you feel so deeply in your bones just that level of exhaustion or that tiredness. So I'm really glad, you know, that people took that permission, you know, allowed themselves, and didn't seem like there was too much guilt, you know, too much guilt arising. Some people also say that, you know, even, you know, maybe before on retreats they would follow that natural rhythm because that was more of where their practice was going. And yet there would still be some guilt. Some guilt. Well, everyone else is, you know, following the schedule and sitting in the hall, and even though it isn't what I want to be doing, there would still be some little tension around that. So it's nice to, you know, just really fully drop in to your own natural rhythm, and those pulls, to see what can be discovered, what can be seen and known about this mind, about this body, about this nature of this life. So that we can grow and expand and develop into, you know, more of our potential as human beings, more of who we really are, starting to let go and to not have to be so controlled by the habituated patterns of our personality. where there really starts to, we start to feel an inner freedom that is not so bound, it's not bound up in the personality. This personality really, the personality is conditioned. The personality develops through impressions and experiences that happen to us over time. And yet there's something that we are that is more than that, that is beyond that. We're not just our personalities. It's just one way that we express ourselves in this world. So as we start to listen in more deeply and sense deeply, what is it that's pulling us? What is it that we need? What's right for us? We're beginning to listen to something that is not just the what I call the ego mind, this mind that is just saying what we should do and how we should be and what the outer authority is saying we should do or be, but more and more listening deeply to what's moving within my own heart, within my own heart and mind, and listening to that and begin to follow that. We call this the intuitive wisdom, the intuitive knowing. The intuitive means it's not coming through the conditioned brain intellect, the knowledge, the database of knowledge that we know and we carry with us, but something connected to the immediacy, the direct moment. This moment here and now, and what wants to awaken in this moment? What's here and what are we responding to directly in this moment from wisdom and from compassion rather than from these ideas that we have, these habituated ideas that we have? So we begin to gain some momentum as the we begin to relax. We begin to settle in. The mindfulness starts to take on more strength. The mind gets a little more focused, more one-pointed. We start to feel like we're gaining some momentum in the practice. And that momentum starts to carry us. We're not needing to work quite so hard. And this is what happens as the days of retreat go on, is we feel like we're more and more being carried by the momentum of our practice and of our wisdom and of our awareness and of nature itself. More and more we feel kind of more effortless quality. That's really one of the joys of retreat, particularly when we come to the end of a retreat. Many people really feel that openness and that lightness of being, and we get somewhat attached to it, right? I want it like this all the time. And then slowly, slowly, some of the old patterns start to come back again. We have to make some adjustment with that. So as the momentum starts to build, we can see even more of the subtleties of the mind and the workings of the mind. As someone said yesterday, after the exhaustion passed, he said, "Now I actually can apply myself more." I liked the way he said that. I feel like now I can apply myself. So really that application of awareness, the application of wisdom, the application of compassion. And it's not necessarily something that we feel we have to do, but more of that, we feel that moving through us, that kind of natural flow of awareness, the natural flow of wisdom and compassion. This is what we're accessing more and more within ourselves. One of the subtleties that we can begin to look at, and what's very important as a pointer in this particular way these teachings are unfolding, is really looking at our relationship to liking and disliking. This way that the greed arises in the mind, and the way the aversion arises in the mind, this whole area around craving and clinging and attachment. Because as you know, in the Buddha's teachings, it's really the attachment that gives rise to our suffering. It's what gives rise to our dukkha. And Ajahn Chah said, if you're suffering a lot, then you're attached a lot. If you're suffering a little, then you're a little attached. And if you're not suffering at all, then you're not attached at all. So it's quite useful to look at this way, this attachment or this clinging, the word in the Buddhist teachings, this clinging arises within our mind. And the way in for us is to begin to look at these movements of liking and disliking. And when I was on my retreat with Utejaniya, I began looking at this particularly, and it was quite revealing in ways that I had never really seen before. Because liking and disliking, of course, just seems very natural, right? It's just part of being human, part of the personality, and so sometimes it's not really very questioned. We just like things and we don't like things, you know? And sometimes we like things a lot, and sometimes we don't like things a lot. We can get, you know, quite emotional or quite attached to our views and our opinions and our relationship to things. And, you know, we have looked at, you know, the suffering that arises when we get caught in the intensity of those mind states. But maybe we haven't really looked at the subtleties of them. You know, the way that they begin to arise that we sort of take for granted. We may not look so carefully. Because liking and disliking really are the conditions for suffering. It's not that they necessarily give rise to our suffering, but they are one of the conditions that can give rise to our suffering. So we want to look more carefully at this. Because these are really the ideas that are playing in the background of our mind. This is when we're talking about how am I being aware? This attitude in the mind, the attitude, is there some leaning in towards something that I want or leaning away from something that I don't want? And that can begin to color the awareness. It starts to obscure the awareness so that we're not really completely settled into the present moment. There's some leaning out already, some leaning out of the present moment into the next moment, either through the liking or through the disliking. So I want to first read this this teaching from the third Zen patriarch, which I've read on retreats before, but it's a piece of teaching that I use a lot for my own reflection and have for many, many years. And this is from the 6th century AD in China. The Zen patriarch then, apparently all of his teachings were written down in just a small little pamphlet. The only words from the third Zen patriarch, but you don't have to say very much when they're profound. This is just the first stanza. The great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. When attached love and hate are both absent, everything becomes clear and undisguised. Make the smallest distinction, however, and heaven and earth are set infinitely apart. If you wish to see the truth, then hold no opinions for or against anything. To set up what you like against what you dislike is the disease of the mind. When the deep meaning of things is not understood, the mind's essential peace is disturbed to no avail. Strong words, very strong words. The great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. So is it really possible to live with no preferences? This is something I've been reflecting on now I think it's been one of the key reflections since I began my practice many, many years ago, because I was given that teaching. And it was always something that stuck for me. Is it really possible to live without preferences? And Stephen Mitchell, who's a translator of many of the teachings, he actually changed that. Because he didn't think that it was possible, I think. Yeah. he changed it to, the great way is not difficult for those who are not attached to their preferences. Mm-hmm. Right? Which might give us, you know, might say, okay, I can do that. But I think that's fudging it a little bit. I'd like to stay with the original translation and just, you know, see where that takes us. If we really start to feel into the possibility that it's having any preferences at all that might obscure our view, might obscure our clarity in some way. Difficulty with preferences is that we actually get led around by them, right? They become a habit, right? The things that we like, we move towards the things that we like, and we move away from the things that we don't like. And when we repeat things over and over and over again, this is because we're animals, we become habituated. We that's how we learn. I mean, it's a good thing. It's good that we learn that way, because we develop and we learn to function well in the world, most of us, not everybody. But through that learning and through that development and through that habituating, we can navigate in the world pretty well. But spiritual teachings are asking us to look more at that, rather than just being animals, just being, you know, mammals who are, you know, somewhat more highly developed. Maybe it's possible to even go beyond that. Maybe we don't even have to continue to be identified as mammals, as animals. Maybe there's a higher brain, maybe there's a higher consciousness that can reveal something entirely new to us, an entirely new way of being in the world. Not necessarily out of this world, not that we have to transcend this world, but to live in this world as conscious beings that are connected to something other completely from the habituated way of functioning. We bring this more and more into our knowing, more into our way of being. That which is immediate, that which is here and now and responding to the way things are from a whole different place within our being. So we begin to look at this movement of liking and disliking. And as the Third Zen Patriarch says, to set up what you like against what you dislike is the disease of the mind. Now, liking and disliking, I want to say that liking and disliking are, of course, a natural movement of the mind. It's not that we're trying to stop that. And it's interesting, I think that's the first place that the mind goes. It's like, oh, okay, now I have to find a way not to like and dislike, right? I think that's the first place, because as soon as the mind goes there, then we've already set up this idea as something that is bad, or it's not something that I should be doing, and it goes right into the whole, okay, now I need to get rid of it. And then we're back where we started, right? We're just back into some kind of rejecting, some kind of not wanting, some kind of trying to make it stop, manipulating our experience. So that's not the way we're going. the beautiful thing about this practice is all that we're asked to do is just simply recognize what's happening. Just simply be aware of it. We don't have to stop it. We don't have to change it. We don't have to get over it. We don't have to make ourselves different. We just want to begin to understand what's happening so that there's a possibility of moving to a higher consciousness, a more refined way of being, so that we're not just caught in these habituated ways of being. So liking and disliking become what I call this portal. It's a portal, it's a way in to deeper understanding. Something that we want to pay attention to. Because as soon as we like something, it is a slippery slope to getting attached to it. It's the condition for craving to arise. It doesn't mean that just because we like something that there is craving or there is attachment. It just means it's a condition that has arisen, and if it's not seen for what it is, very easily, because the mind starts moving towards, leaning towards that which we like because it feels good. Because it feels good. It's pleasurable. As the teachings say, it's loba. Loba is greed. So it's loba moves towards pleasure. Loba moves towards pleasure. So the moment that there's liking, that's already, it's something the pleasure has burst through, and it becomes, if it's not seen, that slippery slope. I kind of like that image, actually, because I can feel it. You know, I can feel it in my bones, how I'm just kind of, oh, there I go. I'm off, you know, and right down that hill. And the thing is that when I'm liking something and holding, getting attached to it, it means I'm usually rejecting something else. It's very easy to then very begin to turn towards that which I don't like and then get into a very strong rejecting attitude towards that. Mm-hmm. It's so easy to begin to see how this actually takes place, and I'm going to tell you a little story about something that happened for me in a minute too, because it's so subtle in a way that sometimes we just really aren't, I wasn't even really paying attention to it. I wasn't thinking about it quite in that way. What happens in that slippery slope is that that's what's called fixation. It's like the mind gets fixated on something, and I want that, and I need that. And then, you know, we've all heard this, you know, it says, I have to have that, and if I don't have that, I'm going to die. You know, it can actually feel like that sometimes. It's like it becomes almost life and death. Whatever it is, whether it's a relationship, whether it's a job, whether it's money, whether it's a trip somewhere, whether it's clothing. I think there's a lot of addiction around shopping and clothing and possessing and having things. It's like, I've got to have that. And it all becomes, you know, part of our self-image, who we take ourselves to be. You know, we build things up around ourselves, and that becomes our whole identity in the world for who I am and how I am and how I'm seen and the way that I'm seen. All of this gets very built up. So we want to understand this fixation, which is a kind of force field in the mind. It actually starts to have a force field that pulls us in, almost like a vortex. We get pulled into something. And as we start to notice it, we'll see that there's many patterns operating within our own mind, that we're getting pulled into things that we like, and that we begin to identify ourselves around. This is what I do. This is how I am. This is the way that I do things. And it becomes the way that I know myself, my personality. It takes the whole shape of our personality. So again, this isn't bad. This isn't harmful. It's not anything that's wrong, and it's not necessarily something that's causing harm to ourselves or to others at this level at which we're looking at it. Of course, this is what gives rise to the harm and to the violence and to all the true suffering in this world. We're talking about the seeds. We're talking about the soil here in our own consciousness that we can begin to look at, that we can begin to see how these seeds begin to take root in our own mind and then give rise to more intensified patterns that actually can be harmful and actually quite destructive when they're not seen and understood. So, when I was at the retreat at the Insight Meditation Society in Massachusetts, where I did my retreat with Sai Dao last May, I was just doing my practice, and in the morning, we'd go in the dining room and get our breakfast, and there was this one place in the dining room that I like to sit, and I like to sit there because it was springtime. May is our springtime, and the trees were all in blossom, and there were lots of birds out in the trees, and there was a bird feeder by the door that they were keeping stocked with lots of seeds, and the birds were flying back and forth from the tree to the bird feeder, and there was lots of activity, and so I liked sitting there in the morning and having my breakfast and watching all the activity. Seemed a lot more interesting than just sitting, just staring at my cereal and just trying to take bites moment to moment, chewing, swallowing, digesting, oh, there's all this wonderful activities happening. So I would go, and then I started to actually put my place setting down by that chair to be sure that nobody else was sitting there. So I had my, the little thermos cup and, my silverware and my napkin, and it just, that's my seat, and I would just go back each morning, and it didn't seem harmful, it wasn't bothering anybody. And then Sai Dao was talking about this, these patterns of liking and loba, loba, he loves loba, loba. Greed, and I would just start thinking, maybe there's something here, 5 days, 6 days, 7 days, going by, I'm going back, watching the birds and all the, and so in one of my groups with him, it's always a little risky revealing your greedy mind. You don't necessarily want the side out to know that you're a greedy person, So, but I was on to something, so I went into the small group, and when my turn came, I told him this story, about what was happening, and he's just so lovely. All the English was being translated by this woman, Matet. But he was understanding what I was saying, and he was just chuckling and chuckling and chuckling. He was going, loba, loba. And just chuckling, and then the other teachers, Steve and Carol, they were laughing, loba, loba, loba. And so I thought, oh, okay, this is what they're talking about, So, I couldn't go back. And, just keep reinforcing this loba, So I knew that I was caught, right? I just don't like sitting in the middle of the dining room. So this is a rather large dining room, it fits 100 people. And so I'm going to sit in the middle. There's no windows, I just have to sit. There's people all around me. There's nothing to look at. There's nothing to watch. I just have to sit there and eat my breakfast. And so I could feel the aversion. You know, so then the opposite, you know, didn't have what I liked, and then I had to do what I didn't like. And so I sat down and I was eating my breakfast. And then I noticed that there was a friend of mine who was sitting across from me. It was completely spontaneous. This woman who also was doing the retreat, somebody I've known for 30 years. She actually, I went on her honeymoon trip with her. my husband and I, and her new husband, we went on this trip to Jamaica together, and we've been friends for all over these years, but we haven't had much chance to really be together or to spend time together. And so it was interesting that her name is Jane, that Jane just, we just started like having our breakfast together. And it was so nice to just sit in the silence together and be close to each other and to have that beautiful time. And it was so interesting how letting go of something that I was somewhat attached to and was getting habituated by opened up this whole new experience that was so lovely and so unexpected and such a celebration in itself. To be able to try something different, to try something new, and then have something else come in that I would have never been able to imagine, I would have never been able to plan. And it's so interesting how, you know, we think we know what we're doing. But it was such a great experience for me because I really saw how that patterning starts to become narrowing, becomes defining, becomes limiting in some ways. It can become limiting. It doesn't necessarily have to be, but when it's not being seen for what it is, I think that that's how the sense of limitation starts to come in. How we start to maybe even feel like our life is starting to become small or somewhat closed in, like, and somehow it can be start to become unsatisfying or even maybe somewhat stale in some ways. And so one of the things Sayadaw kept encouraging, he would say over and over, try something different. Do something different. And so I began noticing just the different simple pleasures, the simple desires that would arise. You know, it was springtime, so these cherry trees were unbelievable. The East Coast has these amazing cherry trees. Just when they're at their peak, they're just these full blossoms and absolutely beautiful. And they're only like that for a few days. I'm sure you have those here. And, you know, just how there's a natural pull, there's a natural draw to go and stand under the tree, you know, be engulfed by the tree, you know, and smell the tree, and, you know, and that's fine because it's natural. It's natural to move loba, the mind moves towards the pleasure, but to know that. And what I found was that the pleasure actually intensified. That it wasn't that there was less pleasure, it wasn't because I wasn't trying to make it go away, I wasn't trying to, okay, I can't now move towards the cherry tree, you know, which would then be just a whole other kind of idea about my practice. It's not just a natural flow, a kind of a natural pull, just to be pulled towards the cherry tree and to fully take in the experience, the fullness of the experience, and then see what wants to come next, rather than get, you know, kind of attached to that, having to do that again and again, and then not wanting the cherry tree to fade, and not wanting the flowers to drop off, and I'm never going to be able to have that experience again, but it was so beautiful, and now it's gone, and what am I going to do, and I'm not going to be able to be happy again, and, you know, the way that we start to make up these stories about ourselves and our life. So these simple pleasures, these simple desires, you know, but yes, they are pleasurable. The holding the cups of tea, you know, just holding a cup of warm tea There's something so pleasurable about that. The hands are warm, it feels very nurturing, it's very comforting. Sipping the tea, and taking a walk in the, we had woods rather than bush, you know, very tall deciduous trees, and just taking walks in the woods, and just the freshness and the colors, and just taking it in, breathing it in, and feeling the pleasure of that, and knowing that it's going to end, because everything's changing constantly, but fully taking it in when it's here, and noticing the tendency to want to go back and re-experience again. I want to have that same experience again. So I'm going to set up all the conditions. I'm going to see if I can recreate the whole thing and have it happen again. Which is what, you know, people do in meditation. I mean, this is, you know, so common of, you know, if I sit still enough and I breathe right and I get my mind in the right place and I get my mind focused enough, maybe I'll get into that really concentrated state and I'll just feel so good. It doesn't work like that. It's not how nature works. There's so many different conditions, there's so many different contingencies that are happening all the time that are unexpected. We can't set up everything the way we want it to be. Even if we did try to recreate it, something's going to be different. I'm going to be a day older, for example. I'm not exactly the same as I was the day before. I may not have slept as well that night. My mind may not be as clear. So when I go back and I try to have the same experience, it's going to be a different experience. Can I be there fully for that one? I remember when I, in the early days of my retreats, when I used to eat, go in the dining room and eat my meals, and my mind was quite mindful and concentrated, and I love food. I have a really good appetite, and I really love to eat. And I would just watch the food disappearing off my plate as I ate it. And because food is generally a highlight in the day on retreat, you know, again, all this wonderful tastes and smells and sights and, you know, not for everybody. Not everybody has a good relationship to food. I mean, some people have a very difficult relationship with food. But this, you know, going in and really experiencing the fullness of the offering of the food and then just see it disappear. And I just remember really not wanting it to disappear. It's going too fast, you know. And when you really start to eat and enjoy, you notice it actually doesn't last that long. You know, it's like 10 minutes, 15 minutes if you're lucky, or you can draw it out. But it goes pretty fast, and then it's gone. It's finished, it's done, and you can't recreate it unless you go back and get more. Sometimes we do that, and then our stomachs, you know, are really full, and then we're trying to, you know, put more food into our stomachs, and we're feeling sicker and sicker, you know, because it all tastes so good, and that doesn't work. So we can start to get some sense of the way we get pulled into these objects, you know, the objects of our experience. So we talk about the awareness and the objects of awareness. Awareness is just doing its job of being aware. Awareness is just busy being aware. But then there are all these objects, sights and sounds and tastes and smells and sensations and thoughts and images, and thoughts make up all kinds of stories that become interesting or not interesting, and we get all involved in the thoughts and get fixated and pulled into our thoughts, and all of that is this kind of vortex. Because when we see it for what it is, when we see anything for what it is, it's just a sight, just a sound, just a taste, just a smell, just a thought, just an image. Coming and going, coming and going, coming and going. And then the mind, which is a beautiful mind, can elaborate on that. that elaboration can be something very beautiful, or it can be something very painful, depending on how much awareness and wisdom is there. So we're not trying to stop anything. We're not trying to change anything. We only want to recognize what's happening. And through the recognition, we gain more and more understanding. That's the natural way of things. It's the natural way of the mind is to be curious, to be interested, to want to understand, to want to grow, to want to know. This is our nature. It's not like we have to make that happen. But when we're relaxed, when we're open, we're naturally interested. We're naturally curious. So all we need to do is to stay with the awareness. That's why I called this retreat Awareness is Your Home. Because we want to stay home. Or at least find out where home truly is. That's really what we're wanting to find out where home truly is, because we leave home a lot. So coming back home to awareness. And everything happens from there. It's sometimes hard to trust that, particularly if the ego is very strong, because the ego will really want to take that seat. Doesn't want to give it up. Doesn't want to give up the driver's seat. It's not going to give it up for anybody unless it gets kind of pushed over. So we're just saying, okay, it's time for awareness and wisdom to take the seat and to trust that. So a lot of this, some people were saying, you know, trust. It's about trust. Trusting in awareness. And the rest happens from there. So I want us to, just before we open up for discussion, I just want us to do a very short little exercise together. See if we can get some sense of this fixating tendency, the fixation in the mind. So just from where you're sitting, with eyes open, I would just like you to look around and see if there is something in the room that you're finding pleasant or beautiful or attractive, just something that your eyes are drawn to, and let yourself just go to that object. Just let yourself go and just make contact with that and just take that in, that object. It might be a sound. And now I would like you to, without really letting go of the object, begin to include your internal experience. What's happening in your mind? What's happening in your body? In relationship to that object. So that you can see if you can include both the external, if it's an external, there's some relationship to that, and your internal experience, the feeling, a mood, whether it might be silent, but some sense of making contact with your body. So there's a way that the external and the internal are here together. So that your mind isn't just leaning out or becoming fixated on the object, but there's a way too that you could also expand your awareness to include your mind and your body. And it might be that you feel you need to go back and forth, that's okay. Just having some sense that you are here, looking or hearing. So I'd like to open up the floor right now, and any comments, if there's anything you'd like to say about that little exercise that we just did as well, anything that you might have become aware of, or would you mind putting on that light? I'm just feeling like I need a little more light in here. Yeah, thank you. Anything at all, what's happening for you?
As you were talking, you know, during this last half hour, I was really feeling into the felt sensation of moving towards, moving away from anything. That force of attraction, that movement away, and just that very movement itself takes away from just the presence, the empty awareness, and that very movement itself is suffering. And just that subtle shift away from the center, either towards or away, it doesn't matter whether it's towards or away, both are equally a movement away from the peaceful center. And it's just that felt sense of suffering just there in the moment.
That leaving home.
And it's an incredibly subtle movement. It doesn't matter how subtle the movement is, it's still painful.
Right.
It still contains that seed of suffering.
Right. That's right. That's it. How is it to really be feeling that so acutely right now?
Oh, very, very present.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Is it having some impact in any way emotionally, or just to feel, because you really have such an acute sense of that at the moment. I'm wondering if there's a way that's really impacting.
I think you said it before. It's like the emptiness is completely full.
You feel full.
Completely full of awareness of what's around, because there's no wish not to be with one thing or another.
Right.
So everything is included. Nothing is excluded.
Right. No wish to be with one thing or another.
Yeah.
Everything's included.
So it's just you know, what he was saying. You know, movement away from it sets heaven and hell infinitely apart.
Yeah. Well, you know, it really begs the question: why would you move?
Yeah. Why would you move?
Why would you?
when not moving is so much more beautiful.
Right. Why would we? Why would we leave? I mean, that's in a way the true predicament, you know, the true tragedy in some ways, is that we do leave. And we don't know that we've left most of the time. You know? But yet when we fully arrive, as you are experiencing the moment, you know, this arrival, I mean, it's like, why would I ever leave this? In some ways, that is like the lion's roar. That's what the Buddha calls it, the lion's roar. It's like, yeah, this, you know, yeah, isn't it like that? Maybe not quite so.
I've done that in the past. It's never excited the mind.
That's true. We don't want to get you overexcited.
But the excitement is just in the presence.
Yeah, it is. It truly is. There's so much vitality, right? So much vitality. It's the life. It's the life force itself.
And so easy to get engaged again in the activity of the mind to differentiate and reject and include and just to move away from here into some other activity, which is why this form is so beautiful, because it does give you that opportunity to see how taking away from, moving away from this awareness into the activity of the day, you feel the movement away, the contraction beginning again. So you just get the opportunity to come back again and practice that centering.
Yes, that's right. Every moment that opportunity, every moment that opportunity, if the understanding is there. The difficulty is that we forget. That's what happens. It's the only thing that happens is forgetting. There's nothing else that happens. We simply forget. And we can't blame ourselves for that. That's what happens. We blame ourselves for forgetting. And then we're back in the whole tumble again, rejecting and wanting. So it's so important to see if that's happening, because when we forget, we just forget. And when we forget, there's really nothing we can do until we remember again. And fortunately, it seems that there's some way we can strengthen that remembering by doing our practice. Our practice of returning when we're remembering and when we are inspired to remember, then we can seem that we can remember a little bit more quickly. But then truly, you know, feeling and sensing and knowing the truth of this, of what you're saying, Andy, you know, really is the inspiration for us. It's something, it's like this itself, that knowing of the truth is what pulls us back again and again. It keeps pulling us back to the center, pulling us back home. Something's pulling us home. Something's bringing us home.
And there's a real felt sense of it, a physical felt sense of it.
Yeah, a physical, it's not something esoteric. It's not something amorphous. It's a physical, substantial experience that has texture, that has feeling, that has everything. Yes.
I've heard it expressed, it is our genetic condition, our humanity,
what got
us out of the trees, into the savannas, into the caves, and learning to use fire.
Yes. It is.
So that's this internal searching.
Yes.
Of greed. It's, or yeah. That's what yeah. it is. It's not a question of ethics or morals or being right or wrong. So
yes.
From perspective of human condition.
Yes. Yeah. So there's something moving in us. There's something clearly moving in us. So we want to know that. We want to understand that. We want to capture that and bring it more into our life fully. Yeah.
I'm definitely sensing an element of not wanting to let go of my wanting. Mm-hmm. And this great fear of the unknown. Mm-hmm. So being with that is so there's a sense of sadness, and so I'm not quite there with that feeling of peace, but I'm trying to be with that fear and that that not wanting to let go.
Yeah, good. That's what's happening for you right now. That's what's happening for you right now. So how wonderful that you can really recognize that. Because that's all that has to happen now, is for you to be able to stay present with your experience as it is. Stay present with your experience. I mean, that sounds so rich. It sounds so full, you know. And the emotions are there, the feelings there, the vitality is there for you. And right on the edge of this not knowing, right on the edge of this uncertainty, what's going to happen? I don't know if I'm ready for this. So your job then is, can you stay present? Because, you know, that experience happens for a lot of people, but they don't want to stay with it, so they just go, you know, take a drug or get a drink or go do some shopping or, you know, something, so they don't have to feel it. So can you feel it? That's all.
I'm feeling it.
I know you're feeling it. I know you're feeling it. So that's your job. And then everything goes from there. Are you, and you're okay, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, you're okay. Yeah. Right. Sometimes it's helpful to remind yourself that you're okay. I'm okay. I'm okay. Good, thank you.
And that meditation this morning, I think, it just reminded me. I'd forgotten, but always not knowing has been this fearful, difficult place. And somehow, just this morning, there was this place of it being a relief to know I was not knowing and just...
You brought it more into recognition.
Yeah.
And there was a relief with that. What do you think was the relief of not knowing?
It was like stressing myself out about I've got to know or something and letting that go, I guess.
Right, letting go of some of the stress around needing to know.
Yeah. No stress not knowing.
Yeah. Yeah, so when you really let yourself feel that, you could feel the relief of it. Mm. It's like, oh, there really isn't anything that I need to do about this situation. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, it can be. I mean, this is pointing back then to the peace again. And just the peace of not doing anything, not needing to do anything. Because the ego mind gets so caught up in thinking it needs to do something. Because if I don't do something, what's going to happen?
A lot of intention towards developing this consciousness. Mm-hmm. And I can see glimpses.
See glimpses of?
Of the joy of sounds and visual pictures and nature and without so much attachment. Or, and I can still have joy.
Yeah, you get a feel for that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's interesting just to even hold the possibility, right? You know, not necessarily having to let go of some of those anchors, you know, if they're anchors, you know, they're serving some kind of function for you. That possibility, is there something else that's possible here? And the mind becomes interested in that expansion. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can see my cultural and social cultivation. Mm-hmm. And it feels quite childlike to be headed here.
Yeah.
Which I think is where I wonder about children being in this space.
Mm-hmm.
And then we get cultivated and modified.
Yeah, good. So stay with the possibility. Is that kind of, yeah, keeping that in the forefront. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
adding to the previous speaker, he said, you don't stop anything. You try not to stop anything. And I think it's very difficult thinking or etiquette, Western etiquette. You know, we have parts and verbs, very basic, and yet it's difficult in a group like this. It's not easy, you know, because we stick with our program and socialization. We just have the children. Children are much more natural than we are.
Yeah. Yeah, so in some ways, in a group like this, you're more confronted, right? It's quite an intimate living situation. So yes, it can be more confronting. Mm-hmm. So then it's just interesting to see how you're holding that. You know, what's your relationship to that? Is there a way to relax?
Literally. Literally.
Yeah, what would that mean?
Fatting a bit.
Yeah.
I really don't like that smell.
Yes, it's another, you know, it smells. Smells are another object, right? Pleasant, unpleasant.
I'm noticing that I can use anything and everything as an object to then return me back to. So it might be like washing the spuds before. Don't want to. Where does that come from? Back in, or Andy sharing his thing. Oh, I want that. Right, where's that awareness?
Yeah.
And then the sense of separate self disappears sometimes because the awareness is much bigger than what can fit inside this form. Mm-hmm. And then there's a sense of being really expansive.
Yeah. 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 I don't know if you could hear her in the back. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So she was talking about how this sense of it, sometimes the grasping will come, I want that, or there's an object, I want that, or I want that. And then sometimes that just dissolves. And the awareness is big enough to include all of that. And that there's not so much separation. And so, but that can change. And then it'll go back into the wanting, the self comes back and the separation is there. But then that relaxes and the awareness opens up and then it includes all of it. It's big enough, she said, it's big enough to include all of it.
And it doesn't feel like my awareness anymore. Yeah. Awareness is, and I'm arising in awareness.
Right, then you're arising in awareness. Yes, the mind arises and the body arises in awareness. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. It's not my awareness anymore. Right.
Mm-hmm. So in that way, perhaps isn't a problem.
Right.
It's,
yeah.
So this idea of not having preferences. I'm with the other guys. I don't think it's necessary to not have preferences, or that to be a goal, because it can be in this container of spacious awareness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it, like she says, can include everything.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so, you know, for me, I just hold it as an open question. It's what I call a koan, your spiritual koan, spiritual question. And I like to toy with it. You know, I like to play with it, just see what different possibilities are on that. Because otherwise, as soon as I come to a conclusion about something, it's really another fixation. It's just another way my mind settles. into some kind of an idea. And I think it's, you know, it's fun to even play with that, just kind of keep things open. And goodness knows how many things people have concluded that then, not too long after that, they found out wasn't like that at all. Just keep our mind like water. One teacher said, keep your mind like water. I like that.
I went down to the stream yesterday to look at the new Duran pump that Dave has put in. And it really informed me, you know, looking at that, because there's a beautiful stream that's flowing and it's got this incredible changeable nature depending on the rain. You know, I mean, it's just a beautiful stream. And in order to create the for the pump, which is fine, as Dave's had to put in a concrete box in the stream, you know, to contain the water. And I was just watching, you know, looking at that and thinking how my mind is like that. You know, that I put concrete boxes in the flow and contain things. You know, I mean, that was a real teacher for me. The stream's flowing, and it's actually going to flow over and around the concrete box. Try and contain it.
Beautiful, beautiful example. Yeah. So you saw your mind right there. Yeah.
I had my own response to that set up. I said, oh no, this beautiful stream.
Destroyed?
Not destroyed, but altered, and just seeing that in myself, seeing my response to it was interesting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, interesting. I'm just wondering, did anyone have that little exercise? Was that informing in any way? Just anybody want to make a comment about what you noticed there?
Yeah, what's for me? I think it sort of highlighted for me how a lot of my practice tends to be sort of, there's the pleasant and the unpleasant, and I so focus so much on the unpleasant. And kind of try to kind of be, you know, sort of accepting of that. But it's quite a shift to be accepting of the pleasant and see the pleasant and then to bring it into yourself. And it was I just felt my body sort of relaxing so much more. So I was sitting, you know, quite a...
Great. Good. So you were able to really bring the awareness back and open up to the body and mind.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Great.
I think also that's telling me how it's kind of helping, kind of keeping that out as well.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm going to cross on to practice some more.
Good, yeah. Good. And I really do want to encourage people to include that as part of your practice. You know, you could be standing outside, so just kind of open up the eyes and really being relaxed in your body and connected to your body. Just let the eyes open and then receive the sights. Receive the sights. Receive the sounds. You don't have to leave. So often we kind of lean out and forget ourselves. We forget ourselves. So really a way of bringing the attention back, remembering yourself, remembering you're here, and let everything come to you. You don't have to go anywhere. Just let everything come to you. A very different way of being. And then things will come and they will go. They will come and they will go. They'll come and they'll go.
The conversation just brings to mind so much the concept of comfort zones and porosity somehow. You know, on a different planet, or that's really where it is.
Say more about
that. Well, if I
let's use a strong word, the word we don't like to use, the word, the wrong word. If I lust after something, and I allow myself to be with that, then it just flows away. Mm-hmm. Something else comes in, another bird, another bee, another wind. So I think if I can stretch my comfort zone to allow everything to be, mm-hmm. and allow myself to be porous, then I don't lose the center at all. Yeah. Expand the strength of the center somehow.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's another way of saying it. Yeah, that's exactly it. Just allow everything. Mm-hmm. Lust is another translation of loba. Exactly it. Stay with that understanding. That's good understanding. Yeah, maybe just one or two more, and then we'll back there, and then.
I only felt drawn to the Buddha, which I found really beautiful, that particular carving. And I became aware when you said just take, be aware of what happens in yourself, of how usually, when I feel drawn to something, it takes me out of myself.
Yes.
And I just got this lovely sense of just being, just ease of some sort. And then my consciousness shifted to the rain, my awareness shifted to the rain, which gives me the same feeling.
Yeah, beautiful.
So it was really lovely to become more aware of that movement and just come back.
Beautiful, lovely. Yeah, and then it's that your experience is actually fuller. Cool. It's like Andy was saying that, you know, we're not, because we haven't left, we haven't split. Otherwise there's a gap, right? And then we feel the suffering in that gap. It's not acute, but it's there. Yes, there's some not fully present. Mm-hmm. Yeah, beautiful. And Jan.
I was drawn to the flowers of the Buddha and how beautiful they were. And was conscious of the thought of, how they, those flowers look in my little cubicle where I'm staying. Place them. And then you asked me to be to drop more into my awareness. There was this more of an opening of my heart, a bit sort of a loving being, and noticing how I sort of shifted from a sort of, these are my flowers, right? Just to be with the feeling.
Yes.
So shifting from my thinking
more
to my heart.
Yes, beautiful. Yeah, your heart became available there. Yeah, yeah, and the fixation happens more like that. You know, more through the I want that. You know, or it's mine. And then the relaxation. It's really the mind relaxes into the heart. That's what happens. We just. The heart is more available.
Interesting how quickly I could move into sort of a possessing mode.
Yes. Yes, how quickly we move into the possessing mode. Yes, good. Very good. Thank you so much. So much awake energy this morning in the hall. It's really wonderful. Yeah. So maybe we'll just sit together for a couple of minutes and then we'll start our day.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.